Hello, and welcome to episode 59 of Cavalytics. Cavalytics is a show about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a special focus on super exciting statistical analysis. I am Keith Carter, a long-time Cavs fan living in the Cavs fan desert of San Francisco. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, a PhD candidate at MIT who is once again taking a break from doing research that could improve the world and is instead commenting on the Cleveland Cavaliers. How's it going, Arnav?
It's going pretty well. I enjoyed the week off, and yeah, we're ready to be back now.
Looks like the Cavs are enjoying the week off, too. Have you been following their Instagram and various social media posts?
Yeah, I saw some shenanigans on Twitter about them doing the VersaClimber. Did you see that?
I did. So what is a VersaClimber? You want to explain that for the people who haven't seen this?
I mean, I haven't looked too deep into it, but it's some sort of a climbing machine.
Apparatus,
let's say. And it was supposed to be really, really hard. And they found the lady who holds the world record or something.
Okay.
And they've been trying to get in touch with her.
And that, because they want to compete with her or something?
Apparently, yes. And who would you guess is the best at the VersaClimber amongst the Cavs?
Well, I would guess LeBron James. Although, I would guess LeBron James.
I would guess that too, right? But apparently Richard Jefferson was on Fox Sports Ohio.
Okay.
And he was having an interview with Ali Clifton, and they were talking about this. And apparently the two people who are best at it are Tristan Thompson and James Jones. Interestingly.
Huh. Yeah, okay.
His reasoning behind James Jones was that James Jones does that all the time since he doesn't really play.
He has plenty of time to practice on the VersaClimber.
Yeah, so like he's conditioned specifically for that machine.
Okay. Well, in any case, the Cavs appear to be getting in plenty of cardio on the VersaClimber and others. Yeah, there's just been lots of posts of, you know, LeBron and the rest of the Cavs shirtless doing workouts, you know, doing their Rocky training montage. It's sort of just something to do during the time off, I guess.
Yeah, it seems like they're ready to be back. Hopefully they've enjoyed the week off and are well rested.
Yeah, I mean, presumably they're practicing a little bit too. I haven't seen too many shots of that.
So Lou talked about it during his interview today, and apparently they practice defense on Friday and Saturday, and Sunday is going to be all offense. So 2 days of defense, okay. One day of offense.
Yeah, I mean, if in terms of like what that ratio should be, it should be like a million days of defense and zero days of offense. But
yeah,
two and one is probably the best we could get, right?
Yeah.
So how do you feel about the Toronto Raptors?
Actually, before we get into that, did you watch that series at all? The Bucks-Raptors series?
Yeah, I watched parts of it.
It seems like
I did not see game six.
Yeah, it seems like the inflection point for that series was when they decided to just bench their bigs and go small with Norman Powell. And that
seems Valanciunas was pretty bad.
In general, he's been a sore thumb for that team. Like, he has some skill, as you can tell in the post, but they just haven't been able to integrate him at all into their offense, and they're usually better with him off the floor. So I think going forward, we may probably not have to worry too much about him. And even if he is on the floor, like, we can get him out of the paint pretty easily.
Yeah, I think the Cavs are tough for Valanciunas offensively. He is not good switching onto people around the perimeter. And that just makes him sort of unplayable against the Cavs since they often have LeBron and four shooters on the floor. Norman Powell, though, he ended up with the highest box plus minus of anyone on the Raptors. He's at 5.8. The second highest was 3.8. Like, he really played well for them, and he only played in five games.
Yeah, he played 120 minutes, as I checked this morning, and he shot 10 of 11 from three, which is a 90%+.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Probably not going to shoot that again, but...
Yeah, his true shooting percentage in the first round was 74%, 74.3%.
In general, he's been not efficient. Like his regular season was like 50s, low 50s.
His regular season RPM, he was the 206th best player in the NBA. He was negative 0.16 on offense. I know, negative 0.89 on defense. You know, he was like a negative one RPM player. He played, and but I mean, that is in 76 games in 18 minutes. Like, it's not that small.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But I mean, look, he might be better than he played during the regular season, but he's not.
He's not going to shoot 10 of 11 from three. He's not going to be as good as he was in the first round. But I mean, again, it's a small sample size. Like, he could be, and Cavs need to be have counters for that too, right?
Yeah, they do. But I'm not sure how scheming for him is that much different from DeRozan. I guess with DeRozan, you're okay letting him shoot threes, and with Powell, you should probably not let him shoot threes.
Right. With DeRozan, the advantage is that you can sort of back off of him, and you only need to guard him when he has the ball in his hands or he gets the ball, right? But if he's off the ball, you basically don't have to guard him, because if it's a long two, you'll live with that. He's still like, he's a good long two shooter, but it's still like 46, 48%, right? Like, it's not.
Yeah. I mean, look, being an above average long two shooter is somewhat useful. Like, for Kyrie Irving, it's useful because when it's close and late, he can get like a decent opportunity if all else fails. But that's not something you want to be your bread and butter in the first three quarters of a game, right? Because the especially against the Cavs, who are going to score at a much more offensive, much more efficient rate.
Right, exactly. And with DeRozan, it's my understanding that LeBron will be guarding him at some point, because that happened last season, especially in the playoffs. I just don't know how much. So if you want to think about matchups, I think Kyrie's going to be on Kyle Lowry. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, probably. They might start JR on Lowry.
Okay.
Not sure.
But then who would you put Kyrie on then?
I guess you put Kyrie on DeRozan. I mean, you could try hiding. They still start Damari Carroll, right?
Yes. So, but the problem with DeRozan is he can still shoot. He's really tall, right? Like, he's big. So he can shoot over Kyrie no problem, right? Like, he'll probably take that shot anytime. And again, like, if DeRozan is taking long twos, you'll probably live with that, right?
Yeah.
But if he's still getting, you know, do you remember like in the playoffs last year in games 3 and 4, he was getting those free throw line shots, and those are bad. I
remember. Yeah, it was frustrating. Yeah, they let him get a little bit too close.
They let him get a little bit too close and too comfortable, in my opinion. And he did burn us a little bit, but not too much, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, look, when you're a volume shooter, and especially the kind of volume shooter that DeRozan is, you end up with a high variance. Like, he shoots a lot of deep twos, right? And he's a pretty good shooter, but that's an inefficient shot. And generally, over the course of a 7-game series, that's just not going to be efficient enough to win. But yeah, you can imagine him heating up for a game or two, and, you know, that kind of variant, natural variance, you know, as well as maybe a couple other guys playing well, them stealing a game or two here. But yeah, I mean, I think their strategy last year was to let DeRozan shoot, and I think it will be and should be again this year. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, I mean, as long as it's not wide open, you know, 10 to 15 foot shots. Yeah, I'm perfectly. Yeah. I mean, you still have to defend him.
Yeah, I guess it's a fine line between, you know, the Lance Stephenson defense, which was basically exactly. Don't play defense, like, on him, and the DeMar DeRozan defense, which is like, look, like, you know, sag off of him by a step or two so that he's not going to drive past you. But, you know, if once he gets within, like, say, 18 feet, like, you should be up on him.
And the advantage is that if it's within 18 feet, you can help on other guys too in the paint itself. So, like,
right.
It's,
yeah, it collapses everything down a little bit.
Exactly. So you don't have to guard him off ball if he's outside of 18 feet. But if he's inside of 18 feet, it's fine to guard him because you can do other things too at the same time.
Do you have a guess for, by RPM, how good DeRozan was this year? Like, where on the Raptors he ranks in RPM?
Probably like third or fourth, right?
He is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th by RPM. Yes.
But if you kick out the small sample size guy,
there's only one dude who's super small, and that's Lucas Nogueira. And yeah, we can get rid of him. But that makes him their sixth best player. I mean, there was talk about him getting MVP votes for a while.
In the beginning, he was shooting like 60%.
I know, but like, I mean, even then, even when he was like at like the highest efficiency he can possibly be, and even for like that short period during which he was going supernova, he still wasn't even a top 30 player. I mean, it's really bizarre, like, what the narrative is on him. And, you know, people sometimes talked about like him being better than Lowry. I mean, that's just so
that's absurd.
Ridiculous.
I think we can talk. So let's talk about what are some important things that help win games, right? I mean, I think that's the skill sets that are important in the modern NBA. DeRozan doesn't perfectly fit most of those, if you want to think of it that way. So, like, I mean, one thing is obviously good spacing for your teammates. He gives you okay spacing, not great spacing. Someone like Kevin Love will give you great spacing. Someone like J.R. Smith will give you great spacing. Someone like Klay Thompson gives you great spacing.
Yeah, I mean, the issue with DeRozan is, yeah, I mean, he's a shooter, so people have to like pay attention a little bit, but he's not a good 3-point shooter. And so
he loves dribbling the ball. So like he's not that quick anyway off the ball. Second is playmaking, which he has, again, to his credit, he has improved in that. Mm-hmm. But not enough where like it's a positive skill set for him. Definitely not in the playoffs where pretty much once he gets the ball, his job is to score the ball and not do anything else with it. Like he had a below 20 assist percentage in the first round, if I remember correctly. It was like 14 to 15 or something.
I actually have it right here. His assist percentage, 17.7.
17, yeah. So it's below 20%, which generally is a bad thing for someone who has the ball that much.
Yep.
Another thing is defense, which, again, he doesn't really do for the most part. He has some length, and he's gotten better at using that, but he doesn't move off the ball. He's not that smart when it comes to helping.
His defensive RPM this year was negative 2.11, which makes him the 82nd best shooting guard at defense. Is that he can't be that bad?
He's pretty bad. I don't know if you've seen it, but like he's just generally lost off the ball. And pretty much the other guy, someone like Lowry, has to cover up for him.
Yeah, he was actually negative 2.47 last year. So yeah, I guess.
He's been bad for a while.
Yeah, he can't play defense.
Yeah. So yeah, again, like he doesn't defend. He doesn't really score that efficiently. He's gotten better, right? Like 2 years ago, he was in the 40s for true shooting percentage. Mm-hmm. He's at least in the mid-50s now, which is around average, basically. So volume shooting around average, as we talked about last time, is useful depending on your teammates, but it's not that useful. So yeah, he has some things he'll do well, but for the most part, he's like an average shooting guard, I would say. Nothing enticing. Definitely not someone I would want to build my offense around.
Yeah, well, the Raptors don't have a whole lot of choice, so they're stuck there. Ibaka is interesting, and the Cavs have not played the Raptors yet while they've had Serge Ibaka.
Yeah, well, technically the last game, but nobody played, so.
Well, okay, yeah, whatever. is he, like, do you worry about him?
He gets better in the playoffs, as we've seen in the last couple of years. So I think his true shooting percentage last year and the year before he wasn't in the playoffs, the year before that he was. And he also had a 66 true shooting percentage or 63 true shooting percentage. So offensively, he gets pretty efficient in the playoffs. Again, it's a small sample size. We don't really know if that's going to continue. But defensively, he's been pretty good too. Like his block percentage is usually really high. I think in the first round, his block percentage was 6 or something. So when he's putting in effort... And he has aged pretty quickly. So, like, his athleticism isn't the same as it used to be in his prime OKC days. But still, like, when he's locked in and he's putting an effort, he's a pretty good defender. And he can shoot the ball at a decent rate. And that's pretty useful.
Yeah.
His shooting has decreased a lot, though.
Yeah, his shooting was actually not great. But, yeah, you're right. He had it in the first round anyway. His true shooting percentage was 51.7. But, yeah, I mean, his block percentage, as you said, was 7%, which is, you know, really good. His box plus minus was 2.8. And during the regular season in Toronto, I think it was like negative 2 or something. And, like, look, box plus minus isn't everything. But, yeah, I mean, he's gotten better.
One advantage guys like this have when it comes to box plus minus is they don't have to facilitate at all. So their turnover percentage is usually really low, and that's very important.
Yeah, his turnover percentage is below 10. So
yeah, that's usually the sort of the marker for low usage guys. If you have a low usage guy who has a above 10 turnover percentage, like that's usually a bad sign.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I used to love Ibaka when he was in OKC. I was really into him. But yeah, I mean, he's been sort of had declining athleticism for at least 3 years now. And I wouldn't want him as sort of a franchise cornerstone like I once would have. But I am a little bit worried that, you know, he dips into the fountain of youth for this series. And, you know,
I mean, Biombo did that last season. He had like a 23, 24 rebound game or something ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think Ibaka's a higher ceiling player than Biombo.
Offensively, sure, but defensively, I think they're pretty much the same.
That's true. Yeah, Biombo did control that series.
Was really good in that series, at least for two games, I think.
He was. It got him a contract.
Yeah.
Big contract.
With Ibaka, I don't think we have to worry too much about playmaking. We pretty much only have to worry about his spacing, like, which again, like, he's kind of a streaky shooter, so you live with that. And his release isn't that quick, so like you can close out on him pretty easily. Defensively, though, he can switch pretty well, and he can keep up with guys like Kevin Love. So like Kevin Love should not take him into the post, right? But if Kevin Love draws him out of the paint, then it's free reign for guys like LeBron and Kyrie, basically.
Do you think that the Raptors will end up... So if they start Valanciunas and Ibaka, then... it's a little bit more clear who guards who. But if they start Powell instead of Valanciunas, like they did, I think the final three games they started Powell instead of Valanciunas. So you have Lowry and DeRozan at the guards, and then you have Powell and Damari Carroll at the forwards, I guess.
Eventually, I think their closing lineup has to include PJ Tucker to guard LeBron, right? So I don't think Carroll will be playing the closing lineups. I think Tucker will be playing the closing lineups.
Yeah, I guess. I think it's
going to be both of the team's small ball lineups that are going to be closing the game, maybe Tristan Thompson closes. Who knows? Depending on how he's playing. So it's going to be, let's say, like you said, Lowry and DeRozan are definitely going to be on the court. I think it's going to be Powell, PJ Tucker, and then Ibaka. Which seems like a tiny front.
It's small, I guess. I don't know who rebounds in that case, although the Cavs have serious rebounding issues when they go small as well, especially if Thompson's not on the floor.
But if Love is on the floor, that's usually negated. Like with him on the floor, they've been a top 10 rebounding team.
And if LeBron is trying, which I presume he will be.
The problem is like when Love gets off the floor and Tristan is only focusing on one end of the ball, which is the offensive glass, like that's when the Cavs start having issues. But
Yeah. Okay. So I guess if they, I think they're going to start Powell. I think if they didn't think Valanciunas was startable against the Bucks, who don't really shoot that great.
Yeah, they're probably not going to start Valanciunas. Then they'll go with Ibaka at the five already. Yeah, which is fine.
Yeah.
So then Ibaka's going to have to guard whom? Tristan, I guess, right?
I guess. Yeah.
And then who's going to guard Love, though? Because then Love can basically feast on whoever's...
He's going to have 5 inches on whoever's on him.
Exactly. So that's the advantage.
Not to mention LeBron. Yeah.
So that's a problem. I think going small, like, we can pretty much... Their five will be fine, but their 4-3 will have the advantage there, so...
So you mentioned PJ Tucker. So PJ Tucker, the Raptors traded for midseason. He is being billed as a LeBron stopper.
He's never had success in that role, and he's 6'5", and he's not laterally that quick. So,
yeah, he's listed as 6'6", but I don't. That doesn't seem right.
Wikipedia says 6'5".
Okay, all right, whatever that means. Yeah, Basketball Reference is 6'6". His defensive RPM was basically elite this year at 1.7. It'll be interesting to see if he's able to do anything against LeBron.
He's pretty old too now, right? Like he's 31 years old. Mm-hmm. From what I've seen from him this year, he's bulky. So like if LeBron takes him in the post, he can probably stand his ground. Mm-hmm. But if LeBron has a full head of steam, he does not have the lateral quickness, I think, to keep up with him at all.
Yeah, I mean, so first off, he turns 32 in 6 days.
He's basically LeBron's age.
Same age as LeBron.
But he's not as athletic or conditioned as LeBron is.
Yeah, I mean, he has some bulk, right?
Yeah.
And he's, probably, I guess Paul George is probably a little bit better, but George wasn't spending
George is a little lengthy, right? That's a problem. Yeah. He can contest from a long distance.
Yeah.
Also, and
LeBron did fine in the first round against George, so.
Yeah, exactly. And also, he's what, a 35% three-point shooter?
Yeah, he's terrible offensively.
Which is average, and like his advanced stats, if you look at his true shooting percentage, his career is like 52, basically. 52.
Yeah, career's 52.7.
So like this Cavs year's are just not going to guard him.
Yeah, I mean, and that 52, by the way, like his last 3 years have been 50, 51, 51, 51. Like he doesn't.
Right. So Cavs have like are gonna have no problem with just leaving him. So if they want to put him on the floor, that's fine. It makes it easier for the Cavs to guard them, which is their sore spot anyway. So
yeah, I mean, so do you think this series is going to be high scoring or low scoring? The Raptors are such an enigma. Like the first like third of the season, they had like the best, the most efficient offense essentially of all time, right? And then
yeah, they were top three. Yeah.
Yeah, of all time. And then when Lowry went down, they sort of rebranded themselves as a defensive team. And yeah, I
do you know what their defensive ranking was this season?
I don't.
Yeah, I'll look it up. But you can keep talking.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I just don't know what to expect there. I suspect this will end up being high scoring just because basically the Cavs have an incredible offense and the Cavs certainly aren't going to play any defense. So,
well, high scoring as in per 100 possessions or just in general? Because there's going to be a low pace game, I would imagine, because Cavs, just go pretty slowly. And same thing with Raptors. Raptors don't like to run in transition.
That's a good point. We're probably going to be seeing a lot of half court offense as long as, you know, nobody's being careless with the basketball. Right. I don't know what to expect here. I'm excited for this series. I think that the Raptors are a really good test. They're almost like the exact right size test. I think the Cavs need something to push them a little bit, and I think that the Raptors can sort of, I think the Raptors can do that in a way that's interesting.
So the Raptors were the eighth best defense in the NBA this season, and a lot of that was buffered from their second half.
So they were probably better than eighth.
Yeah. So they're probably like a top five defense.
Yeah. Lowry is surprisingly good defensively by RPM anyway.
Yeah. He does, you know, he's kind of like Chris Paul. He's like tiny, but he does all the nasty stuff.
Yeah. So we should talk about Kyle Lowry a little bit.
Yeah.
I love Kyle Lowry. I think he is an excellent basketball player. I think he is highly, like the narrative on him is highly underrated. He is, he was the 10th best player in the NBA by RPM. And I'm a little bit confused by the way he's played in the playoffs the last 2 years. But I'm not comfortable thinking that that's an actual thing. Like it could just be sample size and he could be due to blow up. And I'm a little bit scared about that because I don't think the Cavs have much they can do defensively against him. Like, I think it'll be hard having Irving on the floor if Lowry starts going off.
To be fair, he did kind of go off last season against us, right? Like if you look at his numbers.
Well, against three and four. Yeah.
Yeah. And like overall the averages were like, he was pretty good against us for the most part, I thought. And like even then, I think Cavs had a plus 16 net rating in that series. Like it wasn't even that close anyway.
Yeah, but I think the Raptors are a year more seasoned, and I think that Tucker and Ibaka make them substantially better than they were last year.
Yeah, I think if he goes off, they can pull off a game or two. Absolutely. It's just the question is, can he go off for four games while their defense is locked in and Cavs aren't going off? Because like if the Cavs go off the same time he goes off, that probably gets negated out, right?
Yeah. Right.
So again, what is your prediction, you think? What do you think the series is going to end up being?
I think... I want to say Cavs in six, but six is such a weird thing because that means you're winning game six on the road.
So the peaks are usually at 5 and 7 for the home team. So you can say 6 or 7, but saying just 6 is probably disingenuous.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a short series. I think the Raptors are going to get the Cavs handle here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where I'm at too. Unless the Cavs either just get way better defensively or I see more from Irving than I did in the first round. If Irving plays like he did in the first round, we're in for a long series. Let's be honest here.
Yeah.
But if he plays like his normal self or at least like his playoff self like he did last season, I think we can finish this in 4 or 5.
Yeah, I agree. I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Also, what do you think Kevin Love is going to do this series? So he has been bad basically since the All-Star break. And he was pretty bad in the first round.
Well, he was efficient. But yeah, his usage was really low. That was the issue.
Yeah, I mean, he rebounded nicely.
But it's a four-game sample, so, like, if you're efficient in two games and you're bad in the other two, like, it's still...
Yeah, I mean, the longer sample size here is since the All-Star break, he's terrible shooting. So do you think that's going... I mean, do you expect that to turn around? Like, what do you think a reasonable expectation for him is?
With shooting, it's hard to tell, right? Like, it's such... It takes so long to normalize that, I mean, it's just all going to be noise for now. Like, I can't tell what he's going to shoot like. I would imagine he can at least shoot 38-39% on open threes. So.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, as long as he rebounds well, as long as he doesn't turn the ball over, and as long as he's at least, like, above 55 true shooting percentage, yeah, that should be fine. In general, he's had really good games against Ibaka. I don't know if you've noticed that, like, against OKC, goes off. He had, like, a 50-point game when he was in Minnesota against Ibaka. So in general, he's had a lot of success against him.
That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know enough about Ibaka's perimeter game to have like a strong feeling here. But maybe it's that Ibaka doesn't like going far enough out to cover Love.
He's generally pretty good covering outside, but for whatever reason, it's probably just small sample size.
Yeah, for whatever reason, probably small sample size. Love has his number.
But the good part is we have someone like Love who can drag out Ibaka, and that's incredibly useful, no matter what you think of his personal game. Like, he'll help the team.
Yeah, I guess that's right. I had a discussion on Twitter about what to expect from Kevin Love this series in terms of true shooting percentage and shots per game. He shot 58% this year, true shooting percentage. I think if he can do 55 plus and averaging like 12 shots a game, I think the Cavs are in really good shape. But I'm not.
I think 55 plus is definitely reasonable. Like, he did that in the first round too, right? And he didn't shoot particularly well from three there anyway. So.
Yeah, but that's because he had that one super weird game where he had like 27 points on six shots.
Sure. I mean, you can't kick those out, right?
But yeah. I know. You're right. Yeah, but...
It's a four-game sample. You can't kick anything out.
If I were to take his median performance, it would be way, way, way lower than that. But you're right. I mean, all the games count.
I think the number of shots he'll get is kind of a function of whether Irving is going to be in a facilitating mode this series, right? Because last series, as we showed in our last podcast, like, he was in no mood to pass the ball at all.
Right.
The guy had the same number of assists per game as LeBron had steals per game. Think about it that way.
Yeah, that's bad. I wonder, and that includes the like six assists he had in the first quarter.
Five assists he had in the first quarter of the first game. Like, that was basically about 50% of his assists for the entire series.
Right. I wonder what they've talked about during their film sessions.
Who knows?
I'd be sort of curious. I was listening to, do you listen to the Richard Jefferson Channing Frye podcast?
I haven't seen the latest ones, but I did listen to some of his interviews.
Yeah.
He talked about it a little bit.
They did one after game two, and they were talking about, so they were in Indianapolis, and they had just arrived, and they had like 18 hours between like when they finished their shoot around and when they needed to like report the next morning. And they were talking about how they had already watched all the video. And Jefferson joked that he only played 10 minutes, so he watched like all 10 minutes that he played like 10 times. And they talked about how they got sort of chided by Tyronn Lue about a couple things. So, yeah, I mean, I presume.
Oh, they mentioned that?
Okay. Yeah. I presume that they've been watching a bunch of video from the first round and hopefully... I just hope that I worry sometimes that the message the Cavs give Kyrie is that, hey, man, it's OK. Just keep shooting.
Yeah. And I worry about that, too, because they broadcasted that they want him to be a scoring guard and not a passing guard, which is fine. But there is a balance, right? Like, I'm OK with him not being the primary facilitator, but don't kill the offense, right? Which is what he was doing.
He's not going to be Jason Kidd, right? But like, if he could...
Nobody wants him to be that, too. Like, that's fine. LeBron can take that role.
Right. If he can average 4.5 assists a game, like, that really adds a wrinkle that...
He was taking bad shots. As long as you're taking good shots, I don't care how much you pass the ball, right?
Yeah. Did you see the thing where apparently he was 2 for 19 on quote-unquote open threes?
Yeah. Of course, like, he didn't shoot that well either in his first round. And that's part of why his numbers look so bad. So, like, I expect some of that to normalize. But even including that, he was still not a positive just because how bad his shot selection was and how bad his just his passing game in general was.
Yeah. All right. We don't have to relitigate Kyrie's awful first round.
I mean, yeah, he's going to be better offensively. Like, I'm pretty confident of that. It's just a question of if he can play within the flow of the
game. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I'm sure. Well, I was going to say I'm sure he knows that he needs to step it up. But based on what Tyronn Lue said after game four. Okay. I am pretty sure he knows. And that he's going to at least he's going to endeavor to play better. So, yeah, we'll have to see.
There was an interesting moment during one of the interviews. So I think he was asked what is why his usage rate was higher than LeBron's this season. I think Joe Vardon asked him that during the interview.
Yeah.
No, why his usage rate was higher during the playoff series. And Kyrie Irving had like a moment of realization. He was like, I had a higher usage rate, but LeBron had all those numbers, which means I wasn't very efficient. Is that what you're saying? And then Joe didn't reply, obviously.
Yeah.
And then Kyrie was, and then Kyrie just like had this moment of realization. It was like, oh shit, I don't think I played that well.
That's, that's awesome. It's like that moment last year when somebody showed LeBron that thing, like, hey man, you're the worst shooting player in the league, or second worst to Kobe. And LeBron was like, oh man, yeah, I gotta, that needs to change.
Hopefully somebody has shown him his free throw numbers this season.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Look, he's going to shoot 70%.
Remember when he said he was going to shoot 80%?
Yeah. I do remember that. That has not happened. I'm shocked.
If anything, it's gotten worse, but sure, I'll take whatever at this point.
Well, he'll make him when it counts. Don't worry.
Yeah.
There were a couple other notes this week. Did you see that the Orlando Magic apparently have offered their president of basketball operations job or team president job to David Griffin?
Yeah, at least after the playoff run, they're going to offer him. And I don't know how much of that is like him just posturing, right? Like to gain advantage from the Cavs. Because like I wonder why Dan Gilbert just hasn't forked up the money and just given it to him.
Well, I suspect David Griffin wants to get paid.
I'm sure that's the angle here, right?
And I mean, he knows that Gilbert can basically be extorted. So, this kind of stuff would be like the perfect rumor to start. Do you like where would you draw the line on David Griffin? So I don't know what the highest paid general manager is paid, and it's a little bit tricky because there's a lot of like general managers like.
But he's the president of basketball operations. But like,
he gets $12 million a year. Is that what his contract is? Okay. Would you pay David Griffin that?
No, that's a lot of money, man. Nobody should.
I mean, I don't know what the mean, GM salary is.
Like 5 or 6, I want to say. Maybe 6, maybe 7. I don't know.
And it's probably kind of top heavy, you know?
Yeah.
Would you pay him like he's a top 5 general manager?
Top 10, sure. Give it to him. Because, who is the back? That's the thing. Like, who's the replacement, right? Let's say he leaves. Who do you get then?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not as huge a David Griffin fan as many people are. Like, sure, I don't
but,
think
but
that
But do you trust Dan Gilbert to find someone who's as good as Drake? Or, like, even, like, no matter
No, what, I don't.
Yeah, so
I don't.
At that point, like, you just have to pay him a decent amount. Like, obviously, you don't want to give up $12 million, but.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know if you've read the Windhorse book, but I mean, like, it's pretty clear that like LeBron and Gilbert have an agreement that Gilbert is going to spend infinity dollars. And I would worry more about overpaying Griffin if I thought that it would affect the Cavs' appetite for spending money, but I don't think it will.
They paid $2.4 million for Kay Felder's rights.
I know.
Barely played this season, so.
Right. I mean, look, they have the highest payroll by far. It's not close.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're paying like they're still paying David Blatt. I think they're still paying Mike Brown a little bit from his buyout. And so because I think Brown had a 4-year deal. So this would have been this would have been his last year on that deal. So yeah, I think they're playing Brown, Blatt, and Lou. I mean, he just has tons of appetite to spend money. I would be annoyed at being extorted by David Griffin, because I think that knowing the collective bargaining agreement and figuring out how to do clever trades, like that should just be a requirement for the job. Like, it shouldn't be like lauded, like, oh, he figured out like that one team needed to get above the salary floor, and so he was able to trade Varejao to get, you know, whatever. Like, that's not hard, or shouldn't be hard. But look, that's just my opinion on Griffin. Lots of people feel that he's made genius trades. So I think I would pay him like top 10, but I would be concerned if they don't pay him. And I would be concerned with trusting Gilbert to identify a good replacement.
Exactly. That's the issue. Like, I don't trust Dan Gilbert at all when it comes to identifying talent, especially GM talent.
Yeah.
So I would be okay with him paying David Griffin. The question is, do you want to give him the president of basketball operation? Does that even matter, right? Like, that's the real question, I think.
I don't know, because the way that the Cavs front office works is completely opaque to me. They haven't given us much insight into that.
Yeah, usually it's like there's some sort of dynamic between the president and the GM. And just like, for example, with the Knicks, even though the GM is Steve Mills or something.
It's not officially Phil Jackson.
It's not officially Phil Jackson. Like, Phil Jackson is the president of basketball operations, but in many cases, the president is sort of the face of the front office. So like, Phil Jackson is the de facto GM of that team. So like, he's the one making the trade decisions. Whereas in others teams, like, for example, something like the Spurs, where Greg Popovich is the president of basketball operations, but he's not making the trade decisions, right? Somebody else is. So
yeah, that's RC Buford, I think, is their GM.
The dynamic is different for every team, but if your president of basketball operations and your GM is the same, it doesn't really matter per se, because on our team, David Griffin was making the decisions anyway. My issue is when the president and the coach are the same. That's, I think, where there's a big conflict of interest, because the person who's making the trade decisions is also coaching the people, kind of like Doc Rivers does. And that's a big issue, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. Like, he literally traded for his son, right? Like,
right, exactly. Like, that's a sort of the conflict of interest, right? And like,
what Tom Thibodeau is kind of
doing now. Like, he's not going to trade for his son, but it's still a bad dynamic, in my opinion. But as long as like David Griffin has no aspirations for coaching positions, which he clearly doesn't, we'll be fine.
I don't think he does at all. He doesn't have the personality. So speaking of Griffin, I wanted to read something from that interview with Fear the Sword. And then I wanted to read a quote from Lou. And I want to ask you a question after that and get your opinion on it. Right, so here's the David Griffin quote. He said, "We don't do anything with Ty Lue. Since I've been there, meddling isn't something that's been said about us. It's not something that's been said about me. I think Ty is the pulse of the team. Ty drives the ship." So that was from David Griffin. I think he said that in an interview last week with Fear the Sword. I think this was Wednesday, but I can't remember. But this was Tyronn Lue talking about LeBron's minutes. "I mean, I don't understand why people make a big deal out of minutes. He had a week off before the series started. We won 4 straight games, and then he had a week off again. So next series, he might play 48 minutes." Okay, we talked about this
I think
on and joking, on this
by
season.
By the way. The 48
minutes. Yeah, I don't think he's actually going to play in 48. Because he'll play 53 if it goes to overtime. Okay. So we've bounced this around a little bit. Who do you think controls LeBron's minutes during the regular season?
I think it's him for the most part.
Lou?
No, LeBron himself.
LeBron himself, okay. So do you think that Lou wants to play LeBron fewer regular season minutes?
Yes. I mean, he's claimed.
Well, okay, wants to. Of course he wants to. Look, we wish we played him 2 minutes per game, right? And we get all the like team synergies, and then, you know, we just dust him off for the playoffs. But yeah, you have to like actually win regular season games. Do you think there are moments when like Lou is like, "Oh, I'd really like to sit LeBron here," but LeBron is making that sort of untenable? He's, you know, he's trying to check himself in, or he's sulking if I don't play him, or yeah, like what?
I think he wanted to in the beginning of the season, but as LeBron became a little obstinate about it, he stopped pushing back, and he sort of bought into the same idea that minutes don't really matter. and he's just going to listen to what LeBron says about his own body, which in my opinion is not correct. But again, for the playoffs, I should reiterate that it doesn't matter. Play LeBron as much as you can. Obviously not 48 minutes a game, but 44, 43, whatever it takes to win the game. Just make it a short series.
I wonder if playing LeBron 48 minutes is actually not the right strategy.
Yeah, I don't know, right? Like,
depends. It's hard to know.
Yeah. Depends who the, it depends on who his replacement is. If you can even just stay, because like, there are some periods of the game where Irving goes off and dominates the ball. At that point, I think there's no advantage to having LeBron out there anyway. So just get him the rest then. Like, if Irving is going off, get him 3 minutes of rest here. Irving is going off, or Love is going off, get him 2 minutes of rest here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, resting him some makes him fresher for the, end of the game. Fourth quarter. But the the end of games, the end of close games have so many timeouts and stuff anyway. It's anyway, I think there's an interesting conversation to be had about that. And it's funny because obviously during the regular season, I was probably screamed louder than anyone that he should play less and less minutes. But during the postseason, I wonder if the right strategy is.
I don't know if you saw the Bucks-Toronto game, but like Giannis was playing 46 minutes. I think he played 46 minutes that night just because it was a closeout game. And he looked exhausted by the end. Like he was not moving properly. You could tell he was huffing.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, we just subscribed to the Synergy stats package and we haven't fully explored it yet. And there's some stuff that's available to us and some stuff that isn't. But yeah, I'd be interested to see if Giannis covers more ground than LeBron does. Because everything else being equal, I wonder which one is in better physical shape. Like, intuitively, you would expect maybe Antetokounmpo is. He's probably weighs less, and he is 10 years younger. But LeBron James is in such elite physical shape. It wouldn't surprise me if it's LeBron.
Yeah, hard to tell.
So, I guess what I'm saying is just because Antetokounmpo was a little bit – I love saying his full name, by the way – just because he was a little bit tired at the end of the game doesn't necessarily mean that James would be. Right. But anyway, I'm getting a little bit uncomfortable here because I don't want to get quoted saying that the Cavs should be playing LeBron more.
Also, I feel like, I guess you're not allowed to have the biometric stuff right now during games, right? Because if they could do that, then they could measure sort of his fatigue level by the end of the game.
Yeah, they're doing it in practices, though, so they should have, like, a baseline for every player.
But there's no way they're playing LeBron 46 minutes in practice.
No, I know, but they could, like, actually just stick him on a treadmill or something and then come up with some translation layer. And it wouldn't be perfect, but you could imagine it, right? Like, they could have some, I don't know. I can imagine various ways.
You just put it on during the game and just measure it. But unfortunately, the NBA doesn't allow that yet anyway. I know it should be happening soon.
Was there some sort of scandal about, didn't maybe DeAndre Jordan wear one during a game? Or am I misremembering that?
No, I think Delhi used to have one, right? The whoop thing.
Yeah.
And they kind of banned it. The whoop.
I can't remember what it's called. Oh, is that what it's called? Okay. Yeah. Okay. It'll be interesting to see what data they get out of that. Did you see the story that LeBron says he prefers playing playoff games on the road?
Yeah, I did see that.
It was sort of interesting. I mean, I think I know. He didn't specifically say this. He said let me see if I can get the exact quotes here. I've got it here. No, I don't. I suck. Well, in any case, I think what he thinks is that, all right, I found it. Whew, stalled for enough time there. He said, I just like the adversity of the road, James said after practice Friday. Home cooking is great. Love the home fans for 14 years, but I love playing out on the road more than I love playing at home. It's just a weird thing. I love the adversity. I love the tonight is not the night LeBron slogans. I love the you're overrated and all those things. I like all that. I don't know, man. It's the bunker mentality of knowing it's 15 guys plus the coaching staff and whoever that's traveled with us against the whole state and the whole city. I particularly liked the last sentence. I bet LeBron likes that, like, everyone else is sort of forced to be locked in with him when they're on the road. Like, when they're at home, he can't, like, really surveil everybody. And when he's on the road, he could be like, no, we're having dinner at this time, and then we're all going to bed, and then we're going to get up and watch film, and then do shoot around, and then we're going to win.
I'm pretty sure LeBron is a type A personality who likes to have control over what other guys are doing.
Control.
But yes. Sounds like, obviously, there's too many distractions when people are at home, so... he can't really do that.
Yeah.
But if it's on the road, then, like, you know, everybody's kind of all together and they're all focusing on one thing and nobody's out with their family or doing other things. But in general, like, right. It's hard to argue with the results, right? Like, with LeBron especially, like, some of his best games in playoffs have been on the road. His Pistons game in 07 or 08 or whatever that was. His game 6 against Boston in 2012 with the Heat was on the road. Mm-hmm. Game 5 last season was on the road. Game 3 against the Pacers was on the road. His game 6 against Toronto last season was amazing. That was on the road. So he's had a lot of good road games in general.
Yeah. How about game 7 against the Warriors?
It was good, but it wasn't like one of his best road games. But it was still a great game by any standard, but sure. Not by his own standards, I would say.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. That one had a slightly higher stakes, but yeah. It was interesting. Like, almost completely am able to relate to LeBron's opinion there. And I think, like, yeah, he's in the my reading of that is that he gets more control when he's on the road.
The problem, though, is with
that
the Cavs.
That was it for me. Do you have an...
Oh, yeah, no, I was just going to say that the Cavs in general have not been better on the road in the playoffs. I think they had like a plus one or something net rating on the road. And they were like a plus 18 or 19 or something at home last season.
Yeah, I mean...
like some of that was killed by the Warrior series. But still, even without the Warrior series, if you look at the net rating, it was a plus 3 at home. Oh, no, a plus 3 on the road and like plus 16 at home.
Yeah, I think some of that is that the Cavs just blew the barn doors off on some of those home games. And generally, like, look, like, barnstorming on the road is really hard. Like, having any kind of plus on the road is impressive.
Right.
And you might even argue that's almost more impressive than the, you know, what, plus high teens on at home. Probably not, but you could at least make the argument.
Sure. Yeah.
You have anything else you want to chat about?
Not particularly. So you predicted Cavs in 6 or 7?
Oh, yeah. Yes, let's get our final predictions in here. I'm going to actually say Cavs in 6.
Okay.
That's my official prediction.
Yeah, I don't know if I have one, right? Like, it's just, I don't know what Kyrie is going to look like. I don't know what the defense is going to look like. I can't predict those things. I mean, these are such small samples that they've shown us.
I predict high variance. Yeah, I
predict
I don't
Cavs
like
are
going to
win.
Myself.
I don't know in what. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty weak. You sure you don't want to say something? That way you can lord
fine.
It over
Cavs
me if you get
five.
It right. You can,
I'm going to go optimistic. Cavs in 5.
Okay.
Do you think that? Who do you think is going to win game 7 tomorrow?
I don't know.
That's been a close series.
I mean, I think Utah will win, but it's...
But it's a home game for the Clippers. Like, winning a game 7 on the road is really hard. Very few teams ever
win
that.
I know, but they have Gobert, Gobert, you know, he's getting healthier by the day.
And Chris Paul's been great, though. He has like a plus 16 box, plus minus, or something ridiculous.
He's amazing. Yeah. When they update RPM for the playoffs, like, I thought that LeBron might be able to catch him, but forget it now.
With the way he's playing, it's just not. It's not going to be. Right. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's all I had.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that Chris Paul's getting like a nice sort of final hurrah there. I guess they're going to resign him, but I think they're going to, I think he has to stay because they're going to be able to give him so much more money.
Yeah. If he goes for the money, obviously he'll stay. But I was hoping he would go to something like the Spurs, and because they can offer him max money, obviously not as much as the Clippers can, but still he can be like,
yeah, they can't give him the 200. Amazing. 10 million or whatever. Yeah, that would be so fun to watch. Yeah. They could do something really special there. But then, you know what would happen? He'd just get hurt in the second round of the playoffs.
Like, or he wouldn't. His minutes would be managed pretty well during the regular season, and he'll be fine in the playoffs.
Maybe. I would just be so nervous trying to build a playoff team around Chris Paul. I mean, yes.
Well, it's around Kawhi.
Top
Chris Paul is
three player or whatever. I know, but like, if you allocate the assets to have Chris Paul, like, that's a big allocation, right? That's charting the course for your team for the next 4 years or whatever. Yeah, no, look, Chris Paul would be a huge upgrade. And if they had him healthy in the playoffs, like, I think the Warriors would still be favored, but it would, at least it wouldn't be like a you know, ceremonial series, like I think it's going to be this time.
Yeah,
Chris Paul would like massively help. I just don't trust him to stay healthy because, you know, he has this. there's no history of him being healthy, and you know he's getting older and older. I mean, look, we're all getting older at the same rate, but he is, I think, 33 already. And so,
no, yeah, he's not that old. He was drafted after LeBron, and he did go to college.
I thought he was older than LeBron. You're right; he is younger than LeBron. He is 31, and he turns 32 on May 6th, so a day after PJ Tucker. Yeah. Anyway, all right, I'm going to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Who do you think is going to win the Houston Spurs series?
I want the Spurs to win. I really, really, really want the Spurs to win because I want to see the Spurs play the Warriors. But I think Houston will win.
Yeah,
I think Houston played really poorly in the first round, but a lot of it was unsustainable, bad shooting. I think they're better shooters than they were in the first round.
Yeah, I think on neutral ground it would be a coin flip, but I think the home court is going to flip it for the Spurs. So I'm going to go with Spurs in 7.
Yeah. Huh. Well, I hope you're right because I would like to see the Spurs finally play the Warriors.
Yeah, they haven't done that yet.
2 years in a row. Yeah. 2 years in a row, Popovich hasn't even gotten there. So, yeah.
All right.
See if we get there. All right. So this has been episode 59 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. Thanks for listening and go Cavs. And we are going to be recording after game 1 on Monday. So that's when we'll get our next episode out. All right.